It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Steve Bloomer's Washing, your independent Derby County fan podcast, where the mighty Rams are 1 point closer, one game closer, one step closer to automatic promotion this week after coming back from that trip to Leaders Portsmouth with a valuable point. How valuable will it be? Well, we'll find out in the next four games. It was wet, it was windy, it was wild. But Derby's 2-2 draw at Fratton Park has just about kept the chasing pack at arm's length for now. So can we scrape enough points for those remaining two home and two away fixtures to get over the line and secure what would be just a second promotion for our club since 1996? Joining me, Chris Parsons, to look back on a frantic top two clash. He's just about dried out from his trip down to the south coast. It's Richard Kutcher. Hi, mate.
Yeah, just about dried out is correct. I think some of my clove items from that night are not quite as dried out as I am, because it was, I'm not sure what the extreme version of sodden is, but it was it was wet through and windy, but thoroughly enjoyable away trip.
Fully drowned rat vibes. And speaking of animals, it's our very own fox in the box. Anton Martin's here. Hello, mate.
Hi, mate.
I don't know where to start with that particular connection, but Kutch, you've mentioned it briefly there. Absolutely horrific conditions at Portsmouth for that 2-2 draw on the Tuesday night. We're nearly 24 hours from the final whistle. Have you fully dried out now? Fully closed on the radiator after getting back from that one?
Yeah, it's just the flat cap. My leather flat cap is still twice as heavy as it should be, I think. It's still holding some moisture in there. It was really strange rain, actually. It wasn't super heavy. It was actually quite fine rain, but it was a lot of it. You know, there was a lot of fine rain, and it was going on. I walked from Fratton Station to the ground, which is about a 15-minute walk, and I was with my little cousin, and both of us, we just about had just about waterproof enough jackets to kind of survive it, because it was windy as well. It wasn't cold, but with the wind and the rain, it did make you feel very cold. And it was, I thought it really set the scene though for the game. I thought in terms of a top of the league clash under the floodlights and all those cliches, I thought the conditions added to it. I don't know if it benefited particularly one team over another. I think we've got quite a few tricky dribblers that maybe got caught up in it, but I also think it maybe stopped them from playing it as quickly as they might want to. So I just thought all round it was a fantastic evening, great advert for League One and for the Football League. And one of the most enjoyable away days I've done for a long time, without any beer whatsoever as well.
And you took your cousin's 10-year-old son, didn't you, to what I believe was his first ever football match, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I had a spare ticket, and I've got family down on the South Coast. Some of them are Pompey fans, a couple of the older ones are Derby fans, but don't really go anymore. And a couple of them are Spurs fans. And it was my cousin who's a Spurs fan, his son, who had never been to a football game before. And so they asked if I would take him because I had a ticket. And I said, yes, of course. I don't know if I've fully converted him to Darby now, but he was singing along. He was singing songs about hating not liking Pompey and about hating Forest. And I think it's fair to say we're probably his second team at least now.
You say he's a Spurs fan, but like, it was his first ever game. I reckon he's got the bug. I reckon he got him. Well, he's got the bug or he's got a cold. Probably both.
He's probably got pneumonia. Yeah.
You know, because you had the same thing, didn't you? You got it through like a family member.
Uncle.
I think, I don't know, call me optimistic. I just reckon, Anton, that Kutch's little, was it second cousin? I don't know what he is. First cousin, second cousin. But I reckon George will be saying in 20 years' time, like, oh, how do you... You support Derby then, do you? It's like, oh yeah, my dad's cousin like took me to this really random game once in 2024. It was like 2-2. It was really wet and cold, but I just loved it.
Definitely a memorable first game, you know, and definitely a memorable atmosphere as well, because it was abnormally loud throughout the whole game. From all, you know, fair play to Portsmouth, all four stands do get involved and sing. So it was a really good atmosphere, and we'll get onto it. But the last 10 minutes in particular was quite strange, because you could tell both teams and both sets of fans were actually quite happy with a point. You know, Pompey weren't really busting a gut to risk it all to get the winner. Derby weren't desperately pressing to try and win the ball back. And it kind of ended up with both sets of fans just singing about promotion for the last 10 minutes.
Brilliant. Anton, I wasn't really sure what to expect from that game. I thought there'd be goals, just because of the nature of it and two great attacking sides. And it was so good to just see two teams just, you know, go for it, hammer and tongs. But I did not have four goals, a Joe Ward brace and a fox on the pitch on my Derby Portsmouth bingo card. It was an absolutely bonkers game, wasn't it?
Yeah, the fox was bizarre, wasn't it? I think that is a first for me, seeing a fox on the pitch. I've seen cats and pigeons and other strange creatures, but I've never seen a fox. That's quite a weird one. But yeah, the game didn't really go how I was thinking, to be honest. I thought it would be much more cagey than that. I think the weather, as Kutch said, probably added to it in a way, because it made it a little bit chaotic, especially in midfield. But it was so frantic that first half. I can't remember a better half, certainly for the neutral of football, than that first half, because it really ebbed and flowed, didn't it? We were really under the cosh for the first 20 minutes or so. Defended pretty well during that spell and throughout the game, which we'll come on to. But Portsmouth were looking pretty good. But then we came right back into it. Two great goals, obviously, by Ward, and we were definitely the better side. And then the second half was a completely different story. It was a much more defensive setup, but I thought we defended really well, and the game plan was really clear. Warren's been criticised at times throughout this season for not having a clear game plan, but I certainly couldn't criticise him for that yesterday.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And come on to the goals in a minute, and the brace from the Chelmsford Beckham, as I'm sure he probably calls himself. But some five-word reviews first of Portsmouth 2, Derby 2, Chris Smith, regular contributor on SBW, said Rams are going up probably. Daniel Warwick, one of our patrons, deserved point for Foxy Rams. Andrew Woodman, two best in League One. Ben Wright, another patron, said stood tall, four to go. What else do we have here? Dave Lister, played superb on the counter. Leo Thomas said Fox cost us the title. Love that one.
It did stop CBT's attack, didn't it? He was fuming when it came on.
Yeah, yeah, for fuck's sake. Paul Limbert said, still worried we get caught. AK said, is Ward Beckham in disguise? Simon Stinton said, brave Rams edging ever closer. George said, nervous wreck, good away point. Rob Atwell said, beat Wickham, this point's massive. And PRF Derby said, Rams are going up, ole. I won't do the song, but all our patrons have been banging on about how that one's been stuck in their heads all day since that game. Anton, yeah, absolutely fantastic stuff. I think the comment from you that stuck with me from that first goal, which Joe Ward got on the end of, terrific break. Ebu Adams breaking up the play, as he always does. And a CBT driving through the middle. What a run that was from him. And then put it on a plate for for Ward, and you put it simply, CBT has now arrived, hasn't he? What a performance from him against Portsmouth.
Yeah, he was great all game as well, not just for that goal, but he looked really lively. There were a few times where he kind of darted inside, and there was one that he just put over the bar, but he looked a constant threat. The way we set up with on the counter actually really suited him. But yeah, I mean, hopefully he has arrived. I mean, it's only a game, maybe a game and a half, because he did well against Blackpool as well. But Warn has kind of said he was getting up to speed from an injury perspective, wasn't he? When he first came in, from a fitness perspective, I should say, which I was a little bit sceptical about, given that he came from a fellow League One club. You'd think that fitness levels were fairly comparable. So I wasn't really sure how what he really meant by that. But it looks to be potentially true now. If CBT puts a run in between now and the end of the season, and he can continue where he seems to have, the level where he seems to have got to over the last couple of games, then maybe it is a bit of a masterstroke from Paul Warne, because maybe just giving him a little bit of a break and kind of bedding him in, and certainly his agent thinks that, as Kutch pointed out on Twitter earlier today. If that's the case, then it could be fantastic. And what better time for him to do it with the number of injuries that we have in those positions as well?
Just needs a goal, doesn't he, Kutch? Just needs a goal for proper liftoff, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously any goal we can get between now and the end of the season would probably be a huge goal, right? Because if we're going to have some tight games coming up. And to kind of carry on Anton's point, I was sceptical as well. I kind of felt, well, he's been playing all season in League One. Surely he's got decent enough fitness to slide straight in. But I think maybe what it really does highlight is, you know, Charlton's team on paper at the start of the season was a team that we all expected to be challenging at the top end of the table. And obviously their levels, for whatever reason, across that whole team weren't up to standard. Hence, they were in the bottom half and fighting against relegation. And probably a player like CBT, who's so naturally talented and kind of can do it just by turning up, I'm not kind of cast aspersion on his character, but I imagine he probably could get away with being a passenger in that team, because everyone's levels were down and all he had to do is come up with two or three moments a game to have an impact. Whereas at Derby, challenging at the very top of the league, every player's got to be putting their weight. Look at the effort that Nathaniel Mendes-Lang puts in. Like, the amount of times, I thought yesterday actually, he had more impact tracking back and doing the defensive things he did necessarily in the final third of the pitch. And that's what's expected of every single player in that team. And maybe Warren could just see that if you're going to get all of that out of Corey Blackett-Taylor at his current level, he probably wasn't going to be able to have the impact attacking wise that you'd want him to. So I think that all kind of starts to make a bit more sense now. And, you know, going back to the first goal, that driving run, I only appreciated when I watched the full highlights today how deep he actually started. I assumed he picked it up on the edge of on the halfway line. He picks it up nearer the penalty box after Adams wins it, as you say, Chris. And it's quite nice, you know, Blackett-Taylor's, you know, by accident or by design, is hanging around by that area that Adams wins it. And then that's the perfect springboard. And he's saying, he puts it on the plate. And when I saw it was Ward, I was sat really low down. We were literally row C, right behind the goal. So didn't have the best view of anything down the other end of the pitch. But as soon as I saw Ward have it from what looked to be like just inside the box on that perfect angle, I thought it was a goal straight away. Because you just know the quality that he has with his right foot. You kind of backed him to hit a target, hit it across the keeper. Well, I think he hit it through the keeper, but, you know, aim for that far corner, and that's how it played out.
Still not an easy finish from there, though.
Not an easy finish, but you know he's got the technique, and it was Beckham-esque, right? He's got the technique. It's been put perfect weighted pass. It was. How many times did we see Beckham in the late 90s just ping that into the far corner on the edge of the box?
I don't know. Beckham loved more of like a whip, didn't he? And Ward's all about more like a ping, I think. But like, Joe Ward definitely does think he's a League One David Beckham, doesn't he? I think.
He's got the haircut for it. But yeah, I just thought, and Blackett-Taylor, as you said, there was another run in the second half down the left-hand side where, again, he picks it up in our own half. And about four or five players come to him and he just glides through them. And you can tell they're all wrong-footed. He kind of did definitely screw up that shot, hit it high and wide. But yeah, if we can get him in that kind of space, he's going to draw players. He's going to create space for other people.
Probably talking about the same run, but there was one where the ball had basically gone, but he chased a lost cause, kept it alive, got to the byline, got past his man.
That was a different
one. That's probably, to talk to the point you made, Kutch, that's probably the sort of thing that maybe it doesn't always have to do as often at Charlton. Maybe he's not as motivated to do. I don't know. Again, we're maybe putting two and two together here, but yeah, really, really good to see him kick on. But yeah, Anton, on Joe Ward, his first two goals for Derby come in that game against Portsmouth. He had chipped in with a few assists, like whipped in some delicious crosses, right-footed over the course of the season. Probably not as many as he should have done, given his reputation. But, you know, stick him a bit further forward, like stick him in front of Kane Wilson, let him do less defending. And he's a real weapon, isn't he? Especially on the break, because he can get up and down. And he has got a brilliant right foot in the opposing penalty area.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic down that right side, isn't it? Because, I mean, clearly both Ward and Wilson aren't naturally strong defensively. And we've tried it the other way around, and that didn't really work. Ward kind of gave away a couple of calamitous penalties, and that put pay to that option. And it's a little bit of a shame, because we all want to see Kane Wilson further up the pitch, and you do lose a little bit of what Wilson's about in that right back position. But I just think he's a little bit more trustworthy, both positionally and not flying into the tackle like Joe Ward is. And as you say, you get a little bit more out of Joe Ward pushing him higher. He's clearly got goals in him. I know it's his first this season, but he got 6 in the league last year, 5 the year before. So he can do it if he gets in those positions. And with a cross like he's got, that's going to be deadly, especially now that James Collins back. And Kane Wilson did a really good job yesterday. I thought actually both him and Sibley were superb at fullback. They didn't really get the plaudits that Adams and Ward did, and rightly so, but they came up against two of the better wingers in this division, and they kept them quiet for the majority of the game, apart from probably the Portsmouth first goal, which was a lovely move from Portsmouth. They didn't really have anything, and that can be said for most of the defence, but especially you should give credit to two attacking fullbacks out of their position.
A few rumblings and complaints, Kutch, about both Pompey goals. I mean, maybe a suspicion of offside against against Abu Kamara for the first, but does it really matter? I mean, you know, we're not going to get VAR, so we'll never know, but it is a good, Anton's made the point, it is a good little move, and Colby Bishop just completely does cash in with that little flick, doesn't he? And then Kamara mags Nelson, and then it's in the bottom corner, and then the second, yeah, it is a handball in the build-up, doesn't get spotted. But again, as we'll say in a minute, I think Derby arguably maybe got away with a handball themselves. So I'm not really going to sort of whinge too much about that one. It's League One. Bad decisions happen. You have to roll up your sleeves and get on with it, really, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't matter. The offside doesn't look particularly offside to me. It looks like it's level. And my opinion on that is level should be given to the attacker's advantage. I'd always want that to be the case. Maybe if you drew the lines on, maybe it would be a toe offside. The only angle I saw seemed like it was pretty level to me. So I don't have any complaints about that. The handball is a weird one. It is a handball from what I can tell, but some people have said the law says different things about if it bounces off. I think actually Cashin does a similar handball in the build-up to our second goal. I think it bounces off his knee up and onto his arm. But maybe it's not in the build-up to the second goal, but I saw something else in the highlights where Cashin did exactly the same thing as what the Pompey player did. Referees looking right at it and didn't give a handball against Cashin. So I think maybe he was consistent on that. So yeah, offside, I just don't think it's offside enough to be complain about. And the handball, I'm not entirely sure what the law is in terms of it bouncing up against you kind of accidentally. But it did look like he controlled it with his arm, which would suggest maybe it should be a handball.
Yeah, we don't really like to talk too much about refereeing decisions because it's just quite boring, really. But I did think a few minutes in, ball goes forwards. Joe Wildsmith has one of his classic rush of blood to the head. He has his little charge out to the edge of the box. Does quite clearly, it seems to me, put his hand on the ball outside the area. I thought, oh God, it's happening again. But to be fair, I don't really know the rules on that situation. So Anton, you can explain exactly why Joe Wildsmith didn't get sent off in that instance, can't you?
Well, me and Tom were pretty adamant on the Discord that it wasn't a red card because everyone seemed convinced that he might have got away with one. But for me, it he came out, and without reading the laws of the game at the time, I felt that it wasn't a deliberate error. So I don't see how that could be given as a red card. And it was clearly a mistake. It was a wet ground, and he just couldn't stop, and he wasn't doing it maliciously or anything. But I did look up the laws of the game, as the word goes, and on the FA website it does say for under handball, the goalkeeper has the same restrictions on handling the ball as any other player outside the penalty area. So the handball is applied in the same way. So the only way it would be a red card is if he was denying a goal scoring opportunity, which I don't think he was. And the reason why it's not a yellow card is just because it's a genuine mistake. He wasn't trying to do it intentionally to stop Portsmouth getting the ball. It was just that he slipped out of the box. So I think it was the right decision, free kick, and get on with it.
Can you use my favourite pointless football acronym, which is DOGSO, denial of obvious goal scoring opportunity, which someone mentioned to us on X in the minutes after that one. So yeah, that's enough about referees. Kutch, tell me about those limbs. They looked incredible. They looked absolutely, when Derby scored and Sky pans the away end, it looks absolutely biblical in there, like limbs for the ages. It looked phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. And I think what made last night particularly special was actually, I think because of the weather, everyone was in the ground and pretty much in their seats 15 minutes before kickoff, because everyone just wanted to be covered. And as you know, like the concourse at Pompey is basically non-existent. You've got a squeeze. It's like four people wide, the space there. So unless you want to get like down and dirty with the 15-year-olds throwing pints over each other, you don't want to be in the concourse like before the match or at halftime. So basically everyone was in their seats. So even the 15 minutes leading up to the game, and the Derby end was rocking, and that just carried on throughout the first 20 minutes, even when we were under the cosh. And then I think the goal kind of came, we had got back into it, we had started to get a bit more control, and then we obviously hit them on the break for that goal. And it was one of those goals where it just kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. And it was just, you know, and obviously everyone knew the importance of the game. I think the importance of getting the first goal in a game like that, we've got a record of holding on to leads generally. And it was just, yeah, absolute scenes. I was hugging and jumping on strangers I'd only met, you know, 2 minutes earlier, picking up my little cousin.
Surprised George survived.
Yeah, it was quite intense. He's a small kid. But it was, yeah, it was one of the best limbs I've had in the away end for a long time. The second goal limbs was actually, everyone was just shocked. Like, I honestly, it was quite a strange one. It was like a delay reaction, because we're like, he's done it again. He scored again. And it was a bit of a delay reaction. I was looking around to see if there was a referee had blown for something, because it just felt a bit like just surprised that it happened again. But the first goal limbs was, yeah, it was feral.
Up there, Will, absolutely Will Ferrell. Yeah, I watched one of the YouTube videos, and yeah, the noise was different for the second goal. The sort of the yelp of disbelief, you know, like people genuinely couldn't believe we'd done it. So absolutely fantastic night of football. And we didn't lose. That's the main thing. So look, more in a second on SPW. But as I think a lot of you have probably listened to by now, we did have an exclusive chat with Kane Wilson a week or two ago, who was fantastic company, really nice guy, and the most Brummy man I've ever spoken to in my life, which was lovely. So yeah, a shortened version of the chat is out now. The full version, as you know, you can get over on our Patreon. But this clip coming up is from a separate Patreon Q&A that Kane did with us, where our fantastic patrons sent in their questions for him. So this is Kane Wilson talking about his love for entertaining the fans and his love for football in general. Well, that's it. You talked about that before, Kane. You said you like to entertain fans. Is that important to you, like playing with a smile on your face? Because football's a serious business, like, but it seems like you really want to be someone who enjoys playing it at the same time.
I love it. If the day you see me get the ball against the opponent and turn back and pass it back is a day where you say, like, he needs to give it up, because I love it. Like, as long as I've got the ball and I can run with it and I can dribble with it, I'll always be playing. And like I said, I hope I do entertain the fans, because like you said, we're talking about the questions, yeah, they seem to enjoy it. So I'm glad they do, because that was what my goal is, really.
So head over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing to support the podcast and get more bonus exclusive Derby County content from us.
Two-man Forest wall. Gary Teal and Chris Commons standing over it. Surely it will be the former Forest player Chris Commons to take. Commons looks up, takes a free kick, delivered it towards Hulse. Yes! Derby have scored! Derby have scored! Rob Hulse! 10 minutes to go at Bride Park, and in the A52 Derby, Rob Hulse's header, a bullet header from a Chris Commons free kick, has put the Rams in front.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, I'm Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, and you're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing.
We mentioned him a little bit in the first half and so on, but old Ebu just seems to get more and more popular by the game, to be honest. Like, he's genuine cult hero status now after only signing in Jan, and it was his rocket volley against Blackpool that settled it on Good Friday. Just a really fun volley, wasn't it? Really fun volley. It comes out to him, really, and he sort of like, he sort of almost karate kicks it into the top corner, doesn't he? Like, the technique was just outrageous from him. An absolutely fantastic strike, wasn't it, from old Ebu?
Yeah, as you say, it was a really unusual technique. It's because it came so straight to him, but he didn't try and kind of arc his run like you normally see players do in that situation so that they can get a side onto it and kind of get over the ball in that kind of more horizontal angle. He just kind of ran at the ball. It was quite terrifying, actually. It's kind of as if he was running into a tackle, and he got some incredible power on it from that kind of standing start, not really standing start, but that kind of straight on position. He managed to get some whip on it as well, and it was a really great goal, quite a surprising goal, but what an important one as well. To take the 3 points against Blackpool, because actually we were under the cosh at times during that game, and could have easily drawn or lost that game, but it was a really important 3 points, and picking up 4 points over the weekend was a superb return from those two games, really.
Kutch, I think unless David Clowes himself came on and stuck one top bins, we're probably not going to have a more popular goal scorer this season, are we, than Ebu Adams?
Yeah, no, really popular. And every time you hear him speak, I just like him more and more. You know, he plays like an absolute hero on the pitch, and he speaks like one off the pitch as well. I just think he's a really inspirational guy. Never stops smiling. You wouldn't know it necessarily from, you know, being on the pitch, because he's such a battler. He gets everywhere. He puts himself about. He's got quality. I know he has picked up quite a few yellow cards. I think that's more through overzealous refereeing and his own kind of activities, but yeah, he's just everything that we've missed in this team. He looks so much like Paul Bourne's ideal player. I think we'll come on to it, but we should be doing everything possible, particularly if we get promoted, to try and keep that guy in the building for next season, because he's someone that I would like us to build a midfield around 100%.
Really easy to forget, Anton, the whole fasting and Ramadan thing. Like, it doesn't make a big deal of it, but it just absolutely baffles and inspires me how he is an elite athlete at his level and puts himself about the pitch in the way that he does. When against Blackpool, he hadn't eaten since 4 a.m. I mean, I can't even function as an adult in my desk job and without like a full meal as soon as I wake up and a coffee. Like, how does he do it? Physically, how does he do it? It's just an incredible show of willpower and mental prowess, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. I mean, inspirational was the word that you used, and that's absolutely the right word to use. And I know it's been spoken about a lot, but we should keep talking about it because it is an incredible achievement's not really the right word, but an incredible
sacrifice.
Yeah, sacrifice that he's making, and to be able to continue doing what he's doing on the football field and probably running more than anyone and putting in the most effort out of anyone on that football pitch, you wouldn't be able to know unless you knew what he was going through. So it's incredible, and it's great that the club's getting behind him as well. Coaching staff getting involved, kind of Dom's been asking all the questions about it. The club's learning and kind of guiding him through it, which is really nice to see.
I'm sure Kutch, like when Bryson used to, was it his peak? I'm sure I saw some numbers that he did like 10K in a match once or something. I'm sure Adams probably isn't matching those sorts of numbers, but he probably can't be far off. And anyone putting in that level of elite athletic performance needs to like carb load and treat their body properly. So it's just, it's unbelievable what he does on the pitch, isn't it, at this time of the season?
It is, but I think it's important to mention as well, he doesn't run around just for the sake of running around. Like, you don't see a lot of kind of wasted runs from him, or he's not running around like a headless chicken. You know, he really is, he seems to pick his moments, and when he does make a burst for something, he normally gets there, or he wins a tackle, or he wins a 50-50, or he nicks it off someone's toes, or he gets in behind their own defence to mop up. And he seems like he's a very clever player in terms of anticipating where to go and where to be at the right moment. Yeah, I think it's very incredibly impressive. He's obviously an incredible athlete, but I think he's clever with how he uses that as well. And he doesn't just run for the sake of it. It's not just for show. Like, he is literally fulfilling a function of the team which needs to be done. Because to be honest, before he joined us, no one else was really doing that role in midfield. And I think we'd all agree that he kind of is the missing piece of the jigsaw in that midfield.
And I've got another classic Antonism here of some recency bias coming into play about how important a loan signing Ebu Adams has been in recent history for Derby, because it really did feel, didn't it, like we were getting overrun and bullied in the middle, and the back four or back three didn't feel like it had enough protection. Like, Bird tried to do it and couldn't. Howrahan tried to do it and couldn't. Fauna did it a little bit, but then couldn't. Corey Smith did it a little bit, but then played it right back and then couldn't. And I think what I would say is that Adams being in there seems to have brought out a lot in Corey Smith, which is great. He's now playing really well. But how important a loan signing has Ebu Adams been for you compared to other players who've come in from other clubs over the years?
I'm going to correct you there, Chris, because you said it's an example of recency bias, but I don't actually think it is, because although it is recent, I think he is one of the most important.
Some might say it's recency bias, players. But it's open to interpretation.
I mean, Tom and I were chatting about this over the Easter weekend, over some nice roast lamb at Tom's, which is some classic Easter weekend chat. About loan signings over recent seasons. I mean, we've had better loan signings, I think, in terms of quality. I mean, Mason Mount, naming just one, is probably the best loan signing that I've maybe ever seen at Derby, certainly in my lifetime, in terms of sheer quality and technique. But in terms of importance to the team, as Kutch said, Adams has filled a gap which we didn't have at all in the team before he joined the team. And I mean, it's been compared in some ways to George Thorne when he came on loan in 13-14, but we did have John Eustace that season. So although Thorne stepped up the level and kind of added that extra quality, which was very much needed at the time, I don't think it can be quite compared to Ebu Adams in the same way. I think Adams has probably had more influence on this team than Thorne probably did back then, because we had the quality and he just took it up to the next level. Same can be said for the likes of Mount and Wilson and Tomori. They were hugely like high quality players, and clearly they added a lot to the team. But we did have other players around in the squad that could have done a job. So it's a difficult question. Obviously, recency bias might play a part, but I'm going to say that he is probably the most important loan signing within the last decade or so, at least.
I think you've mentioned a few, which I would have mentioned in passing, but I agree. I think the reason that Ebu Adams will certainly be a more important loan signing than George Thorne if we get promotion, particularly if we get automatic promotion. I think we can maybe revisit this discussion at the end of the season. The other two that spring to mind, Leon Osman. So Leon Osman joined us in the back end of the 2004 season. Funnily enough, Leon Osman only made 17 appearances for Derby that season. And according to what I've got in front of me, Adams has made 13 so far with four games to go. So he could end up playing exactly 17 games for Derby as well in this back end of the season. Now, Osman, for those that remember, was absolutely instrumental in making sure we survived that season in the Championship, scored 3 goals. I'd forgot he was actually recalled early towards the end of the season. We lost him for the last 3 games, which I don't remember at the time, but I imagine we would have been thinking that was a serious blow to us. So I think Osman has to be in the conversation because he was a huge part of us staying up in the Championship. And the other one, Chris, if you remember, would be Treibo West. We signed Treibo West on loan. Was that 2000, 2001?
I think so, yeah.
And he was absolutely incredible defender, and we needed all the help we could get at, you know, in defence that season. And was obviously an incredible character. Now, obviously, we got relegated a year later, so you could say how important, you know, was that generally. But I think Osman and Adams, I think if Adams contributes to us getting top two, I think maybe Ebu Adams could be our most important loan signing.
Or far too long since Victor Ebo got a mensch on the podcast. So huge, huge fan of that. The obvious question with Ebu Adams, Anton, is can we keep him? And a lot of that clearly factors on, do we get promoted? That's, you know, that's the question you have to ask before we can even answer this properly. But we've sort of had a little look at his situation at Cardiff, and is he wanted there? Is he in the plans? Why was he allowed out on loan in the first place? Haven't really got a clearer picture of the answer from that, really, have we, Anton? But I think if we do go up, it seems like Ebu does genuinely like it here, and we've clearly taken to him, so we've got to have a decent chance, right?
Yeah, in whichever division we're in next year, he'll do a very good job in that midfield. I've got no doubt about that. And there's a lot to be said as a player, I think, about the fit in the club that you're playing in, and it can have a big impact on performance, and obviously on your personal life as well, because you've got to, it's like any job really, you've got to enjoy what you're doing and enjoy the community that you're part of to not only have a nice life but also bring out the best in your game. So hopefully Adams sees that. I think he's the type of character who would value that quite a lot, so hopefully he would want to stay. So it kind of comes down to his parent club, really, and whether they want to keep him. It's always one of those where pre-loan signing, clearly they didn't fancy him, but they might have seen his performances in a Derby shirt and changed their mind. But as a lot of the guys were saying on the Discord, it's been a while since we've had a long-running transfer saga, isn't it? So it'll be quite an exciting summer for once.
There is that catch, but Anton's right to say that it is up to ultimately the parent club on whether they'll let him go. But if I remember rightly, with Thorne, he was like so good and fitted in so well that Thorne was just like, yeah, I don't want to go back to West Brom. Like, I just want to sign for Derby now, even though they're in the champ. So I think the player does have quite a big say in it. It might be up to the club, but if the player do want to go back there, there's only so much the club can offer them, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. He's got 1 year left in his contract. I think Cardiff's in a bit of a funny situation because they've had the same manager throughout the whole season, and they've had a better second half of the season than they have had first half of the season, but he's only on a 1 year contract himself. So his contract is out in the summer. Now, that manager didn't fancy Ebu Adams in the first half of the season. I think he had a collarbone injury last season, which kept him out for large parts. And then he obviously started kind of on the back foot, didn't get in the team, and then the manager's kind of moved on. So the question will be, if that manager stays in place, maybe there is a deal to be done, because maybe he doesn't fancy Ibro Adams for whatever reason. Or, as you said, maybe they see how he's been doing and think, well, let's try and find a role for him back at this club, because he obviously is a good player. Or they change manager and then they have a manager who really does fancy having a player like Ibro Adams, and they're desperate to keep him. So that part of it is completely unpredictable. But as you said, if the player is desperate to come, and I also noticed that Cardiff have 13 players out on loan at the moment, so they've obviously got a big squad there. If the player is desperate to come and doesn't really want to hang around, and Derby are offering some money for him and he's out of contract in a year and they've already got other midfielders, then maybe there is a deal to be done. But we just don't know. Derby are in a position, I think, if we did get promoted, where we could offer fees for players. But you've got to remember, we've probably got to sign a whole new front line as well. We are short of midfield. We're losing Max Bird. I believe Conor Hourihan will be leaving in the summer. We've only really got Corey Smith, and I imagine he's out of contract in the summer, because I think that was a two-year deal, and Liam Thompson. So we need midfield reinforcements. We also need probably three new strikers. So there's going to be a lot of business that needs to be done. Adams will be top of my list for sure, but you can't blow your whole budget on him.
Yeah, well, one player who we don't have to worry about with that, thankfully, having signed until 2026, is old Nathaniel Mendes-Lang. Got to give him a mention on this episode because just a couple of hours before we started recording, he was nominated for League One Player of the Season Award. Of course he was. 8 goals, 16 assists this season for a friend of the podcast, old Nat. Fantastic season for him. Surely the best season of his career, even if it is in the third tier. So we put this one out to our patrons. What's been your favourite NML moment of the season? And I'll come to Kutch and Anton. So probably some that you may have chosen yourself already, but Jimmy Gregory said NML is great at Vale Park and the Port Vale win. I was going to say the same, but his drive and shot at home to Stevenage that seemed to galvanise everyone in the ground. It was the first time anyone had tried to do anything and it changed our season. Chris Hill said Port Vale away, heading for a 0-0 draw. Inch perfect cross with the outside of his boot on a plate for John Jules with his first touch off the bench. Pete Lee said versus Charlton, injured foot, wore odd boots, scores and then went off. My personal one was Bristol Rovers at home back in November. It was either 1-0 down or 1-1. He got the goal, sort of fired in that cross that caused an own goal. And then it was 4-0 burst forward, wasn't it? With like a step over and like a burst of pace. And then that got the winner an injury time. And that for me, Anton, was like one of those moments where I thought, yeah, maybe this team's got something about them. You know, like maybe this team can go the distance and get results in difficult situations, but mainly thanks to him. Like, he's got us out of a lot of holes this season, hasn't he?
Yeah, and that's the thing with him this year. It's not necessarily those standout moments which have defined his season. It's the consistency which he's performed at, which is quite a rarity for, what you'd probably describe as a bit of a luxury player out on the wing. Someone who's quick, kind of beats defenders and chips in with goals. It's so rare for them to consistently perform in the way that he's done. I don't know what his actual minute stats are this year, but it must be up there with most other Derby players, barring the centre halves, I would say. So that's really why it's totally justifiable why he's been put up for the award. In terms of top moments, I mean, yeah, the Bristol Rovers one was definitely up there. Charlton was probably my favourite. Kutch, myself and Tom were in that away end, and it was just a bit of a mic drop moment, wasn't it? He looked dead and buried. We thought he was going off the pitch, and then suddenly he was there and he scored and then left the field, and we obviously went on to win that game. So that was an enjoyable one, and another good away end, not quite rivaling Pompey, but definitely a good moment. What about you, Kutch?
I think for me, the goal against Exeter, and he scored a couple of goals like this. There was actually a period, this was just turn of the year, wasn't it, January or February, where he just showed that huge burst of pace behind, you know, picking up onto kind of a loose ball or hopefully lofted ball over the back four, and just the first touch, perfectly getting out of his feet, racing away from the defence, and then kind of dinking it into the bottom corner, right in front of another away end at Exeter. And that was to go 2-0 up in that game. And that felt like a really, really important win because Exeter are on good form. It was good. It was one of our best away performances of the season, I thought, really clinical. And that moment from Mendes Lang just really summed it up. But I agree with you about Charlton, because for me, Charlton was a professional performance from Derby. It wasn't a stunning performance, but we got the job done. And Mendes Lang was the man that we needed in that moment. He only really played the game for 5 minutes because, as he said, he was oft injured for 5 minutes or so before that goal when he pretty much went off straight afterwards. And that kind of sums up our reliance on him in certain parts of the season, particularly early in the middle of a season where we were so reliant on his goals or him creating something. And he was just like, got that moment by the scruff of the neck, put it in and walked off and said, what are you worried about? And that was just... You know, that kind of sums up his impact.
It's probably one of your more niche office references that you've made in this podcast. I still got it. You're not getting that one past me. I see what you're doing. Yeah, great stuff. And I'm sure he's probably in for, you know, a host of awards at the end of the season. Surely a shoe-in, pun intended, for Jack Stamps. Although, you know, Cashin, Nelson, maybe even James Collins could have a say in that as well. So great stuff. Great stuff. Let's talk about it again. I've just got these words ringing in my ears from Kutch about it's not going to take 90 points. It's not going to take 90 points. So since we last spoke about this, Bolton have dropped more points, but then won again. Bolton seems to be flying at home, but they're pretty patchy away, aren't they? I mean, it is going to come down to what Bolton do as much as what we do as to how many points we need. So for them... 5 games to go, Bristol Rovers away. How about a little Chrissy Martin goal there? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Then Portsmouth at home, Shrewsbury at home, surely they'll win that. Port Vale at home, surely they'll win that. And Peterborough away, who knows? Another tough game on paper, but will Peterborough be safely in the playoffs by then? I don't know. So Kutch, what do you reckon? Obviously our games, Wickham away, Leyton Orient at home, Cambridge away, Carlisle at home. Has anything changed for you in terms of Derby's task? Obviously win as many games as possible, but is there any more margin, any more or less margin for error?
It's hard, wasn't it? Because obviously 4 points clear looks great. It could be 1 point clear come the end of Saturday if Bolton win that game against Bristol Rovers at the weekend. That run of three home games for Bolton does kind of concern me a little bit. Obviously Pompey will be a tough game. Pompey are still going for it, obviously desperate to win the title. I imagine they could almost get promoted against Bolton. If they beat Bolton, they'd be pretty much home and dry in terms of automatics, you'd expect. So they'll be right at it. That's obviously a big game for them. I mean, Peterborough actually have, apart from Bolton at home last day of the season, I know Peterborough have got a lot of games to make up, but, you know, Port Vale at home, Oxford away is a tough game, Fleetwood at home, Bristol Rovers away, Cheltenham away, you'd expect them to do all right in those games. If they could beat Oxford, they'll probably win most of the rest of the others. And then they got Bolton. So I'm kind of hoping that Peterborough have got a sniff of something. I'd rather we'd be guaranteed second come last day of the season. But I kind of hope maybe Peterborough have got something to play for against Bolton last game of the season. Yeah, I just wonder if Bolton could put a run together. But Derby have got 4 very winnable games. And Derby need to just go and win them. Just go and win those games. Put it in your hands. Probably afford to drop points in one of them. Let's go and beat Wickham. And I think we'll be feeling good about ourselves again. But they are the games we've slipped up in recently. Like, we put in a good performance and beat Bolton. We put in a good performance last night and got a point at Pompey and could have won it. We beat Blackpool, which was, you know, on paper a tough game at home. Wickham away, Leyton Orient at home, Carlisle at home. They just feel like games we could put in another Northampton-type performance, and that's what concerns me. But we're so close to the finish now, they must see the finish line, and just 4 good performances gets us promoted.
I like to think, glass half full, that we won't see any more Northampton-esque performances, and I think that's because of the way we played against Portsmouth and how much we will have built our confidence and just taken it up a notch from the way we competed and went ahead. Yes, we technically dropped points, but it showed that we are on a par with the best team in this division. and that we can and should beat anyone and everyone, basically. But what I'm clinging on to for dear life with Wickham is that they, of course, have a cup final before they play us. The old Bristol Street Motors Trophy against Peterborough on the Sunday, whilst Derby, meanwhile, have 8 days off. You've got to hope Derby can get some sort of minor, tiny advantage from that, haven't you?
Well, I think it's more than a minor advantage because, I mean, that would be a tough game for Wickham and it will be a difficult one to come down from playing at Wembley and then playing against Derby a few days later. So it is the perfect time to play Wickham. And on paper, I mean, as Kutch said, we should win all four of those games on paper. Clearly, football is not played like that, but ultimately it comes down to mentality at this stage of the season. And with Paul Warne at the helm, I don't think we could have a better man in charge, because for all the critics around tactics, style of play, his man management and his calmness are up there with the best, certainly in this division. So he's been there, he's done it. He'll be able to motivate the players and get them ready for these games. So that's the optimism that I'm sticking with. Clearly the goal difference is going to play a huge part. So that point yesterday at Portsmouth is a much bigger point than just a point, because it means that if we do win three of the last four, Bolton would have to win all five of their remaining games, which seems unlikely. So that's got to be the target, really. Win three of the last four, which we're more than capable of doing as long as we prepare well and we don't let nerves get the better of us.
Yeah, time for the King of League One to wear that crown with pride, I think it's fair to say. We're going all in, Kutch, towards the end of the season on SBW. We're going a podcast a week because it just seems really important right now. Every game seems massive. So we're going to come back. We're going to Wickham, aren't we? So we'll probably do an at-the-match one there, right?
Yeah, we're going to Wickham. So we'll definitely record a pod from that day out. We're going to us three are going to Leighton Orient at home, aren't we?
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
Me and Tom, we're trying to get tickets to Cambridge, but we missed out to Cambridge away. And then you guys are going to Carlisle at home, final day. I'm still going to see if I can sneak a ticket for that somehow. To hopefully be there with you guys on the final day. But yeah, we got to do a pod kind of reacting to every game now, because I still expect there to be twists and turns. Derby won't do it easily. I'd love to think we're going to win four games. I can't see it, just because, you know, when have we ever done that in a running before? Not really since the mid-90s, to be honest.
Anton, will we do it?
I'm quietly confident.
You sound it.
Get off that fence. Kutch, will we do it?
Yes, but it won't be easy.
Yeah, that's the spirit. Look, as I said, we're back for an At The Match podcast after Wickham, and we'll be back also after Leighton Orient. But until then, Richard Kutcher, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
And Anton Martin, an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, Chris.
See you soon.